Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Justice Janet Protasiewicz attends her first state Supreme Court hearing as Republicans continue to talk about impeaching her. Plus, the multi-million dollar campaign Democrats launched to try and pressure Republicans to back down from impeachment calls. And Governor Tony Evers says he will veto Republicans' revived tax cut plan. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for September 8th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Jared, this week we're going to talk about kind of the impeachment latest. Before we get to kind of some new Republicans talking about that, as it's kind of swirling in the Capitol still among Republican circles, first we got to see the first interaction between the seven justices on the state Supreme Court as they held their first public hearing. Now, it wasn't anything exciting, but there was a lot of media attention, I will say, because of the tension that we've seen between Chief Justice Annette Ziegler and some of the liberal justices as well ever since Justice Janet Protasiewicz took to the bench. Now, like I said, there wasn't anything surprising. It was a typical hearing about advocates and justices asking questions to them over eviction notices. But it comes kind of timely because there's a lot of media attention, like I said, because there's still a lot of Republicans talking about removing Protasiewicz from the bench. Now, this week, I caught up with Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu and asked him simply, have your feelings about impeachment changed? Because he was the one initially, right after Protasiewicz was elected, that he didn't seem interested in using the Senate's new impeachment powers ever since they gained a supermajority. He said, hey, it has to be something very serious. And what he meant by that is it has to be a crime that was committed. So I asked him, have your views changed? And he basically didn't rule out impeachment, but still was adamant as calling Protasiewicz as that she's prejudging cases based on the comments that she said, and he tied her to the Republican Party based on the $10 million that the party gave her on the campaign trail. Republicans have continued to blast her for that and calling the state legislative maps unfair and rigged. However, it's important to note, JR, too, that other sitting justices have accepted campaign cash from the Republican Party, including Brian Hagedorn and Justice Rebecca Bradley. But still, this is kind of the MO for Republicans now that they're really pointing to this money and her comments. Let's just take a listen from my comments that I grabbed LeMahieu with and Assembly Majority Leader Tyler August, when we also asked him about kind of the money aspect about this as well. Let's take a listen.
Right now, we have a judge who has prejudged a case. She said the maps are rigged, and she took $10 million from the state Democrat Party. And now the Democrat Party is spending $4 million to fight potential impeachment. She needs to recuse herself because she's prejudged the case. That's the simple answer. She needs to recuse herself.
Do you think that the justices should have recused themselves when the Republican Party brought cases and they had received money from the Republican Party?
I think that in this case, it is clear that the case has been prejudged by this one justice and that that justice needs to recuse herself, and I ultimately believe that she will.
Now, you heard Representative August talk about recusal. I think she's going to recuse herself. This comes timely because we got new motions about Republicans' effort to try to kick her off the bench of redistricting cases, and basically she was cleared that she didn't do anything wrong.
So, and actually, it's been months old. So remember back in January and February, I think it was, there were several complaints filed against her over comments she made on the campaign trail. State has judicial codes saying you can't say certain things, right? The U.S. Supreme Court has basically invalidated similar speech codes in Minnesota for judicial candidates. So these complaints came back May 31st, actually. She was notified by the Judicial Commission. They dismissed the complaints. I talked to Senator Corey Tomczyk, a Senate Republican from Mozenie. He filed one. The state party filed one in conjunction with a guy from Dunn County, I believe it was. They basically said, we looked at your complaint. We dismissed it based on a reading of judicial codes, case law and precedent, and pushed them aside. Now remember, though, while they said they found no misconduct, that's only talking about what she said on the campaign trail. That's different from the other things raised by Republicans with this recusal stuff, which is the $10 million in the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, $8 million in change in direct transfers, another million or so in in-kind contributions, That wasn't addressed, right, by the Judicial Commission. They're saying this is a problem, too. So now we keep trucking on this whole impeachment thing and recusal. Protasiewicz took the letter she got from the Judicial Commission, sent it out to the parties in the redistricting case, said, okay, look, I've already asked your opinions if I should recuse. Does this filing change your minds at all about whether I should sit in this case? In talking to a lot of lawyers this week, a lot of the people, there isn't anybody I found for who thinks that she's going to step off the case. They are fairly certain she will hear it, in part because she said she would. Go back to the campaign. She said, I will step off a case involving the Democratic Party. They are not a direct party in this suit, although Republicans argue they have a direct interest in it. I will step off of those cases. I would hear, though, a redistricting case because it affects everybody. So she's already signaled what she's going to do. The question is when she issued that ruling. It's a September 18th deadline, I think it is, for those updated opinions. So we're talking maybe late September. We find out what the court's going to do early October with redistricting.
And impeachment comes at a time when Wisconsin Democrats are trying to get on top of it because they launched a multi-million dollar effort on Wednesday with hope of kind of convincing Republicans to think twice about doing this and impeaching Protasiewicz. Ben Wickler, the chair of the Democratic Party, said the $4 million campaign will include advertising as well as volunteers knocking on doors. And he really hammered at this press conference the possible political ramifications if Republicans go through with this. Let's take a listen to what he has to say.
Today, defenders of democracy and allies of democracy, including the Democratic Party of Wisconsin and many others, are launching a statewide campaign to defend justice, to ensure that the Republican Party knows and that Robin Voss knows that an attempt to impeach Janet Protasiewicz would be an absolute political disaster for Republican candidates for office up and down the ballot in the state of Wisconsin, and a disaster for our system of government and democracy in our state. And Robin Voss and Republicans in the state assembly and the state senate now have to ask whether they wish to be the authors of the death of judicial independence in our state, of the total politicization of a mechanism in our constitution that's reserved for corrupt conduct, crimes, or misdemeanors. It's a step that goes far beyond what we've seen before, and public input to help drive home the gravity of the situation could make a critical difference.
So Democrats are looking ahead to what can possibly happen, trying to get ahead of this. Their end game is, hey, we could possibly raise money off of this, even though we're spending money to get people's attention on this. Meanwhile, we've talked about this before, JR, is what is the end game for Republicans? Mm-hmm. You and I have talked to off the side that we're getting a sense that not a lot of Republicans want to do this, but it's putting Assembly Speaker Robin Voss in what of a position because he's the one that is leading this possible threat that, hey, Protasiewicz, if you don't remove yourself, we're going to highly consider this.
Yes. So along with what's the end game, what's the off ramp? So obviously, if Protasiewicz recuses, this all goes away. That is not going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay. So once she says, as we expect, she's going to hear it. For Democrats, let's look at their whole plan so far. So $4 million, $1 million from the state party. Other allies will handle the paid media stuff. I talked to Better Wisconsin Together, which dropped millions of dollars in the Supreme Court race this spring. They're going to handle some of the paid media. By the Democrats getting involved in this way, Republicans say that is more evidence that they are connected to Protasiewicz. They are linked. So for Democrats, okay, they're going to spend money. They're going to pressure Republicans on this issue. Republicans are going to pressure, might lose their seats anyway, if there are new maps in place. So what do they have to lose? What's really going to pressure these guys not to do it beyond their own sense of, is this the path we want to go down, right? Because we are taking impeachment and talking about it in a casual way. I talked to Senator Tomczak, I talked to you about his, complaint. He said the quote-unquote secret meetings the liberals had, he thought that was impeachable. Like it's coming like almost like a rush to let's utilize this power. Now, as Democrats are trying to slow it down, trying to pressure them, what's that going to do? At the same time, if you're Ben Wickler, if you're not preparing for war and war comes, you look bad, right? He has to have a game plan of like, okay, they're going to go after her. We have to have something. This is their answer. Also, for Democratic groups in general, the party is raising money, but we're going into election year, which might be somewhat important nationally, right, in 2024. All these groups are getting organized right now, using this as a vehicle to get donors engaged, to raise awareness nationally. I mean, I can't count the number of national publications that have written about the situation in the last few days,
right,
Wisconsin. That is going to be a flood of money coming in. Okay, so that's going over there. But then why do $4 million? Why not do a recall? Like, if you really want to, like, escalate to, like, the old Cold War, like, mutually assured destruction, why aren't you saying you're going to take out one of ours? We'll take out one of yours, i.e. go after Rebecca Bradley or Annette Ziegler. That's, you know, a debatable strategy. But that's the dynamics I'm hearing about this week. Okay, let's talk about Robin Voss and the Republicans. Number one, you and I both know from our conversations, the Senate does not have 22 Republican votes to convict and remove Jenna Protasiewicz. I've talked to a number of them, don't want to touch this. They think this is a bad period. Ones who've lived through Act 10 and the recalls in 11 and 12 say this is not good. Elections have consequences. We got to live with what happened. But now Robin Voss has been kind of talking up this possibility. But if you look at his words really closely, he says things like, she should step off. He says, I'm an optimist. This is Robin's words. Mm-hmm. I believe she'll do the right thing and step off. If she doesn't, we'll have to do an analysis of what to do. But the $4 million, he said, doesn't make us more or less likely to impeach. We'll have to do an analysis. That's very important. Mm-hmm. He's buying himself wiggle room. Same time, he's talking himself into a corner, right? Because the base is now saying, we're going to fight. We're going to go after her. This is getting us excited. What is the off-ramp for Robin Voss? And oh, by the way, is that $4 million going to make it more or less likely he has a path out of that corner? It's a big question for him. Talking to lawyers, there's a better argument to be made about the whole due process thing. We've talked about this before, yeah, with the Caperton decision from the U.S. Supreme Court. Should she hear this case? The U.S. Supreme Court had ruled in that decision with West Virginia, $3 million is too much, et cetera, et cetera. In the public's eye, people tell me you have a better case to make of, hey, this doesn't look right, okay? Now, you can argue she could have used different language in the campaign trail, not said the word rigged, said, hey, I agree with the dissent in that redistricting case. I thought there were some interesting arguments. These maps raised some constitutional concerns to me. I would welcome a second chance. That's way different than rigged, right?
Right.
But talk to Democrats, like, Republicans would have found something no matter what to go after. They found a way. And what I'm getting at is I think this is all a delay tactic, trying to find a way to survive this election cycle with these maps, get through 2024, figure out something after 2025, and then live to fight for 2026. So do you have the case with the U.S. Supreme Court and try and get them maybe not to rule in your favor right now, but delay things enough that this map survives this cycle? That's what I'm watching. Like, is there just a delay thing here? Because if you go through impeachment, I don't know what the votes are in the Assembly caucus, Republican caucus, mm-hmm, but I know from my sources, when they met last week, they didn't take a nose count. They weren't saying, where do you feel on impeachment? They were saying, like, let's just not get there. So we're kind of in a saber-rattling phase right now.
Right. And it kind of leads in next to our next topic, because lawmakers will be back in session next, mm-hmm, week. So it's almost another opportunity where us as reporters, it's all about this talk in the Capitol. You're going to be asked about it. Mm-hmm. And usually there's a media avail with Assembly Speaker Robin Voss before session on Tuesday. So that'll be likely another topic that he'll talk about. Meanwhile, he's going to probably push to the issues that are on the floor. So, mm-hmm, let's get to those. It's going to be all about tax cuts and child care. But first, talking about the tax plan, we got news this week, more like a confirmation, mm-hmm, that Governor Tony Evers is going to do everything he can to make sure the GOP tax bill does not become law. He vowed to veto it, saying that the proposed one in his state budget, which Republicans rejected, would have provided $1.2 billion in tax relief. And he said that measure would have kept taxes low without driving the state into debt or leading to cuts. He said he's not going to sign the, quote, irresponsible Republican tax plan that jeopardizes our state's financial stability. And he's pointing to what Democrats also raised during a public hearing about a legislative memo that warns there's possibly not enough funds, essentially, for this nearly $3 billion tax plan that Republicans put together that would cut taxes over 2 years. So some have argued that's not a legitimate argument to have. Even Republicans, Representative Mako said on the committee, you know, that's kind of a red herring. You're not really accounting for extra revenue that's going to be coming into the state down the road. Oh, by the way, we're projected to have this $4 billion surplus by the end of the 2023-2025 state budget. So they're kind of just saying, you know, almost calling BS. Meanwhile, other states that have had been warned by the federal government that this could lead to possible, you know, structural deficits, those challenges have gone, you know, to lawsuits, to courts, and nothing's really happened. So that's we'll see what happens. But I think the big question is, since Evers is going to veto it, do they come back to the table? Do they meet again? There's kind of some sour tension still over the past few months after the budget process. It's something that will remain to be seen. But they still have this chunk of money that, you know, most taxpayers want a cut of it, but they have two completely different plans on how they want to get there.
Worth noting, Todd Onstad, a Kenosha Democrat, voted for the tax cut in committee, but said I reserve my right to change my mind on the floor vote on Tuesday. So, I mean, there's obviously a politically popular component to this tax cut. I mean, if you're a retiree, the idea of basically being tax-free in Wisconsin, probably not a shabby thing. The Republican message is this is all a middle-class tax cut. Now, how do you find the middle class? Remember, this bracket covers up to $405,000 of income for a married couple filing jointly. Where is your cutoff, right? So they're not the top 0.1%, but they're the top 1.5 or 2. I'm not sure where that line is, but that's their message, right? It's going to be this is the middle class tax cut. Evers nixed the top tax bracket going down. This is all middle class tax cut. I know it's going to win the day with the governor, but that's going to be their message on the floor next week.
Right, and I highly doubt that there will be any last-minute changes to it. Voss has been pretty adamant that this is the plan going forward. Don't know, you know, the Senate is in on Thursday. They're likely going to take it up as well. But let's first note a little bit about the child care bills, too. Overall, we talked about this last week, they would ease regulations. And kind of the public hearing, the message that I got across is that there were some providers that really welcomed the flexibility that would give them when it comes to operating their business, like having 16-year-old supervised children alone, expanding group daycare centers from the numbers from increasing on that. But others really wanted the child care counts program renewed. That has been the message of the governor. He has still been traveling the state talking about this. The program is set to expire, I believe, in February. So those were funneled by pandemic aid, and that is going to run out. And Governor Evers and some Democrats fears that this could lead to a swath of child care centers closing when we already know right now child care costs are pretty, you know, high, and it's difficult to get your child in some areas of the state to even find a provider. So there are more. Let's do ease regulations. Evers is asking for more money, so he's not a fan of these bills. And it's going to be one of those session days that I don't know if we're going to see some, you know, between these two, it might be party line votes.
Yeah. And during the hearing, one provider said she wanted the child the subsidies because the difference was paying her employees $10 an hour versus $13 an hour with the subsidy. And I think her point was we pay more for people to watch our dogs in Wisconsin than to watch our kids. But again, like we said last week, this is deregulation versus state aid. There's not a middle ground right now, and so far there's no talk about finding one between the two sides.
All right, let's move on to the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Hey, they met in person.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was pretty excited about that as a TV reporter to get some non-Zoom meetings going on. But here's what they talked about. There was a whole host of things on their agenda. They met for several hours. But the one that we're going to focus on is about formalizing guidelines for challenging a declaration of a candidacy, which is the forms basically you file out saying, hey, I want to run for office. But in doing so, members rejected a suggestion from Republican Commissioner Bob Spindell about the effect that he believed this rule was geared at making it easier to force Donald Trump off the presidential ballot, as there's been a lot of national reports pointing to how the 14th Amendment could essentially lead to that of not having his name on there. So Spindell voted actually last month to authorize agency staff to begin the process of creating an emergency rule to create new standards for challenges to for a declaration of a candidacy. The commission ultimately voted 5-1 to move forward with the proposal, despite Spindell's comments. Let's just take a listen from Spindell and Democratic Commissioner Ann Jacobs on the issue.
We should not get in the position, in my opinion, of challenging people in terms of their character, in terms of whether or not they might have competed, insurrection. It's up to the candidate to get the number of voters or people to sign his or her petition. And then also it's up to the voters to choose who they want to vote for. And I don't think we should start going down this process, and it should be killed right now. There's no need for it. It just, all of a sudden, it just seemed to come out of nowhere after all this stuff on TV and everything else about trying to knock Trump off the ballot.
Everything you just said is a complete and total fabrication. It does not exist in reality. It is false. It is untrue. It is a myth. It's a conspiracy theory. There is nothing about what you just said that is accurate in the least about this. This is a procedural recommendation to streamline challenges that already exist. I can assure you the only people bringing challenges are not the Democratic Party. Republican Party brings plenty as well. This will help them in their challenges as well.
So I summarize. Mm-hmm. Jared, let's kind of break this down a little bit of what this actually means going forward.
So let's separate out a couple of things. Presidential candidates in Wisconsin are not placed on the ballot by nomination papers unless they are a write-in candidate or don't have ballot status. So Donald Trump, if he wins the Republican nomination, is not going to worry about nomination papers. What happens is the state parties that have ballot access, includes Democrats and Republicans, meet and certify a list of candidates to be in the primary ballot in April, Elections Commission. They're automatically on. The candidate who wins that primary in April, once he or she is nominated by their party at the convention this summer, they are on the ballot in Wisconsin, period. Now, they have to file a declaration of candidacy, which basically says, I am eligible to serve in this office. I meet the requirements. At this local level, and state level, you can't be a convicted felon, for example, who's not been pardoned and serve in state office or local office. It says there, I'm not a felon, essentially, for a local candidate. There is a process to challenge nomination papers. There are rules laid out for that. People are challenging that declaration of candidacy using the nomination paper process. All this does, and I know this is very, like, in the weeds, says we're going to have separate rules that lay out how you challenge a declaration of candidacy. So you can already challenge that right now. So let's say Donald Trump wins the Republican nomination. He gets the nomination at convention. He's on the ballot. Nothing changes these rules at all. They don't go through with them. You can still file a challenge declaration of candidacy. I'm not saying the commission can do anything with it. And Don Millis, the chair, said we can't deal as an agency with the 14th Amendment argument, which is the basically insurrectionist type argument. Bob Spindell is arguing this opens a door to a challenge on your moral character and fitness for office. That is not supported by anything else I can find. But we're in this environment right now where there is a lawsuit filed in Colorado over the 14th Amendment. One was filed in Dane County Court last week. Long shot Republican write-in candidate for president challenging Trump's ability to be on the ballot, essentially. I wouldn't expect it to go very far, but hey, you never know. But this is not about Trump from anything I can find. This is about creating a process to clarify how we do things. That said, we are in an environment where anything that goes on with the ballot is like automatically suspicion because there is a group of people who don't like the Elections Commission or Megan Wolf, the administrator, and think they're all up to something no good. Bob Snow is brought into it, but I can't find any lawyer who will tell me how this actually works, that it would be different, a new avenue, right? Because there exists already to challenge the declaration of candidacy. But, Bob is convinced this is going to cause a problem, and you are going to see stories in conservative media trying to make a drumbeat of this is a problem. Now, don't forget as well, these proposed rules. So we go through this process where a month ago, Bob voted to begin the process of creating a framework for rules. It's called the scope statement. This is the scope statement. They are putting that together. This now goes to the legislature. The Joint Committee for Review of Administrative Rules has a chance to review it. I talked to Don Millis this week. He said, I want JCR to have a public hearing about it. I want them to bring us in and testify about this proposal so people know it is not about Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. Will that beat things down? Probably not.
Probably not. But we'll probably be there covering
it. That's where
we're at. All right. Let's get to stock picks this week. Rising this week is legal bills. And you've probably counted up quite a bit of this with registering contracts, more private attorneys for Republicans.
Yeah. So we talked a little about the contracts for these new ones. But going back to January of 2019, when Josh Call became the Attorney General, Republicans have racked up $15 million in fees for private attorneys that I've counted. Now, a big chunk of that has been being sued, like the lame duck lawsuits over what they did in December 2018. That was like $4 million. But this chunk from redistricting is going to add probably $2 million plus if we go to trial. That total also does include, for example, the legal fees taxpayers have to pay for the Gable investigation. Because remember, There were several lawsuits filed by American Oversight seeking records from the Gateland probe. There are judgments for more than $400,000 in legal fees. Mm-hmm. Those are all being appealed, which means more lawyer fees to cover the cost of or try and rescind those appointments or bills. Also, there was a lawsuit by a media coalition about a former state rep and his harassment claim. I found in my last batch of legal bills that we are on the hook now for $80,000+ of those because Republicans assembly lost that case. The judge approved a stipulation that they would pay then us, the taxpayers, pay the media's legal fees. So, you know, it's expensive. Part of it, yes, we're being sued. Republicans are being sued. In this latest lawsuit, it is all being driven by a Democratic lawsuit. Mm-hmm. At the same time, they are racking up some big-time fees with these cases, and it's driving a cost for taxpayers.
All right. And Mix, this week, we're going to focus on the 3rd Congressional District because we have the new face in the race, and we're talking about Tara Johnson.
Yeah. So she is in, former La Crosse County Board member and chair, left in 2020, has been helping other candidates ever since, doing other like volunteer work in the community. You have this new geographic dynamic where you have Rebecca Cook, announced from Eau Claire, Tara Johnson is from La Crosse, and Katrina Shanklin, who is not in yet but has been encouraged to run, she's from Stevens Point. Now, one, what's the map going to look like next year? We keep talking about where's this lawsuit about a congressional law. Haven't seen it yet, so I don't know if a change in place for 2024. So if that does happen, Shanklin is not in the district probably because there's this red territory that connects Stevens Point to this district. If I were a Democrat, want to make it more Democratic, I might lop off all that red territory and move east of to Dane County and grab some of that. But that's just me. But let's say it stays as it is. Okay, is it geography that drives things? Because Tara has the biggest population base. Rebecca's got the second biggest, and Katrina has the smallest of the three. Does that mean she's got locked up Stevens Point and go spend all her time in La Crosse trying to cut into like Tara's numbers?
Right.
Or
yeah.
Is it all money and infrastructure? You know, who gets the most money? Rebecca Cook had raised $200,000 a month ago. So Tara has this challenge to catch up to her. Oh, by the way, there's a Harvard student who's running. Not sure what to make of him because he lives in the district, going to move in May. And then we have Brad Pappas said no. Deb McGrath has said no, endorsed Tara Johnson. And Missy Hughes has said no. So we're getting close to the field being set. The thing that I'm wondering, what's the map going to look like? And where's Van Orden? Like, what's his kind of like vulnerability? Obviously, had some bad headlines with stuff he's done in D.C., but he had $1 million in the bank this summer. He's not like a pushover financially, so there's a gap to go. And how much will the DCCC spend, the National Democratic House Committee, on this race? Where does it fall on the priority list when you have to, you know, try and flip the House?
All right. And falling this week is National Voter Mail Registration Form.
Yeah, so it's not a very sexy
word.
Sexy, I
was just going to say.
But it's another example of the courts saying how elections run. So the U.S. government has approved this form to register by mail. It asks for all kinds of information. The conservative Wisconsin Institute of Law and Liberty challenged it on behalf of a voter saying, this is not legal. You can't ask for some information, and you're also asking for the right stuff on this form. A judge this week said, I'm not going to address that because you can't show me how WEC approved this form. Kevin Kennedy was the old head of the Government Accountability Board and the old Elections Board way back when. There's a line in there that in the ruling saying that even Kevin couldn't provide for sure when and where this is actually approved. So the judge said, without formal approval of using this form, you can't use it, WEC, and I'm barring use going forward. So not a huge thing. The lawsuit does not seek to like rescind registration to anybody who's used this form. They just want to bar its use going forward. He gave the judge 14 days for WEC to notify clerks they can't use it anymore. That's another example of these half dozen cases that could have huge implications for how we run elections in Wisconsin. And the bigger ones to watch, really in Dane County, absentee ballots, drop boxes. Those are big things that could come into play in a big, real way next fall.
And another timing issue of when it comes down, because we know last-minute changes right before an election can confuse many voters. All right, that will do it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.